Great, let's go. You've got to love soil. You've got to really, really, really love soil and get fascinated with it. Become fascinated with it and see, understand that it's alive. It's a process. It's a amazing layers of life living within life, really at different scales. Also, so we're looking at the soil food web slide 15 of this presentation. And we're going to introduce also the idea, a word to our vocabulary, and it's trophic. And we're going to talk about trophic levels. So don't be scared of scientific words. And really it just means like an energy level. And you'll get what I mean very quickly is, we've already talked about this. The only energy, new energy arriving in the system is coming from the sun. So, and the first harvesters, the first trophic level, the first level, energy level of harvesting that, the energy from the sun, of course, is happening through plants. And what the plants do is they translate that into sugars. And through those sugars, they cultivate the organisms that are around them. They actually plant selectively garden, and they will seek to feed and to find, locate bacteria, fungi, and things that will be potated on by also by nematode worms. imagine the plant using its sugars to build relationships at soil at a sort of microscopic level, in which the fungi and the bacteria that they are actually starting to create and improve the soil that the plants can grow in. It's an ongoing process. And of course, that also is being fed by the dead organic matter, the stuff that's either been eaten or has died and fallen off the plant. It's been returned to the ground, again, as just sort of as a carbon waste, a carbon sort of residue, which then again is quickly reincorporated back into the soil by the bacteria and the fungi. So that's our second trophic level. Do you see what I mean now about that word? We've translated the energy of the sun through plants into the next layer, this amazingly complex and not very well understood, you know, world, microscopic world. And again, go back, think about the biodiversity map that we had in the previous lecture, and then start to realize how so much of the importance and so much of the life of Earth is going on is these microbes, because that's basically what they're doing, is they're returning dead organic matter back into the nutrient cycle and assisting and enabling plants to trap the energy of the sun. Then, of course, there are those larger predatory species that are going to regulate the populations of those bacteria and fungi and nematodes by in turn predating on them. So there's then the third trophic level of the, it calls them shredders, predators, and grazers. Like I said, they're doing the next level, either the next level of decomposition, this is like they're breaking down what's left after the fungi have done their job, or they're predating, eating the other organisms that, generally from the second trophic level. By the time we get to the fourth, sort of that by the time that energy has been translated to its fourth level, we're actually starting to then visibly see maybe insects and millipedes and worms and the visible elements that are feeding on the microbes that are behind it. So, you know, when you're gardening, when you're growing, when you're interacting with soil, remember, it's not just the birds eating worms. The worms, there's a whole food chain behind that that feeds the worms, that in turn drives the system. This is our soil food web. This is the wonderful interconnectedness of what creates and maintains and builds fertility in our soils. As permaculture designers, our responsibility, our objective is to interact with this process in a way in which we can optimize it. We can help it speed up by creating the right conditions, maintaining the right moisture levels, feeding it in certain ways, and making sure that every layer of this trophic pyramid, of this sort of cascade of interactions that we are conscious that they're happening, and we don't do things that might break them down. So say, for example, if we start removing all the birds and the animals, then suddenly the insects and other maybe predatory worms and things suddenly start to take over and eat all of our crops. And that's because we've removed the part of the ecosystem that would normally regulate them. Okay, so we're now, through our permaculture mindset, through this focus of catch and store energy, we're understanding how it's the living soil that is processing and holding on to the really the core key components from which we build everything else, and that's soil and water. And the ability of soil to hold and absorb water depends on its constituency. Okay, so we're going to jump now to slide 16, and we're going to just look at a few pie charts. Some people, these don't work for some people, sometimes they do. Basically, the headline news is, if you were to look at the proportions of any soil and wonder what a good healthy soil, what proportion of it is the mineral bits, the clay, sand and silts, what part of it is the humus and roots and the living part of the plants, what part of it might be the microbes, the soil biota, the worms, and what portion it might be actually just space, airspace. I've been talking a lot about how important it is that soil can breathe. That's why we never stand on the soil. That's why we make raised beds. That's why we're very conscious and we keep the soil covered. It's because we don't want to lose the air inside it. And because, of course, that's what the microbes are breathing. So healthy soil is 40% space. It's 40% air. Because if we really look after a really good topsoil and we care for it really well, then we have the potential of it being 50% air, 30% organic material, and maybe 10% minerals and 10% water. That's a really, really interesting way of thinking about air. So thinking about soil, I'm fascinated about this edges concept, principle that we've already, again, touched on, and I will keep bringing it back in. So if soil is 50% minerals and organic matter, water, and 50% air, then it's half and half. It's a really interesting edge. It's neither sky nor rock. It's half sky, half rock, if you know, half air, half, you know. Fascinating. It's our interactions with these living soils that everything comes to us. So we have to realize that soil comes first. Soil and water. In fact, you know, and our ability to hold on to water defines our ability to, generate yields, to generate crops, to, you know. Let's jump to the next slide. We're looking at three test tubes, each one with a maize plant growing in it. They're all each the same variety of plant, of maize, sprouted at the same time in the same, exactly the same soil. The only difference between file 1, 2, and 3 is soil compaction. So on the right, you can see a really stunted plant because the soil is really compacted and there's very little air in the soil. Middle one, we see the results of that, and the huge significance of the uncompacted soil on the left is the plants are significantly healthier and more vigorous. And that's because there's many, 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 and look at the root development as well, it's extraordinary. And that's because there's many, many more interactions going on between the plant and the soil. We've got so much more edge, so many more microbial exchanges going on that's allowing that plant to grow much more quickly. Keep that picture in your mind, because that's why we don't stand on soil. That's why we don't compact soil. That's why we feed the soil all the time with organic matter. That's why we try not to let the soil dry out. It's for this very reason. So if we're thinking about catching and storing energy, the health of the soil is fundamental. Next slide is about pH of soils. And without going into too much technicality, let's just remember there's another factor of soil, different types of soil, is that some soils can be acidic and some soils can be alkaline. Most of the vegetables that we like to grow, potatoes, like a slightly acidic soil, are like about a 5. A lot of vegetables really like sort of 6 or 7 neutral, 6 or 7 being neutral, and the brassicas, the cabbage family, maybe 7.5 to 8, ever so slightly alkaline. There are highly specialist plants that can live in, acidic or alkaline environments. But for the ones that we're cultivating, is we want to be able to keep the soil pH slightly, close to about 7. And what this diagram is telling us is that at different levels of pH, different levels of acidity or alkalinity in the soils, those key mineral nutrients might actually be present in the soil, but they're not available to the plant. The plant can't take them up. They can't absorb those key nutrients at times, at certain stages on that pH scale. So these are things to be aware of, to test soils and to understand that there's a lot to know. But the key thing is to think of them as living, breathing, wonderful things, which is what they are, and to cultivate them with a sense of engagement and compassion and understanding. The next slide, just moving on from that, is slide 19, and we're looking at a transect cross section of a valley imagined, and on one side the underlying bedrock is permeable. In other words, water can freely drain deeply away, and whereas on the other side we're seeing impermeable substrate. That means that water sits on the ground very easily. The soils become saturated, therefore they become anaerobic. They don't have any air in it, so there's little or no microbial activity in them. So just interesting to think about these differences. So on the right hand side, we had a lot of these kind of soils in Wales. That's that I recognize that from around here, is because the bedrock, where it's a mountainous area, the bedrock is quite close to the surface. Sometimes it's cracked and fractured, but there's big areas where it's not very permeable. And what happens in that is the plants and the grasses that grow there, they grow slowly and they're very tough because they're thin soils. But as they break down, as they die, they don't properly decompose because because the soils are too anaerobic. So instead, they kind of pickle and you get a thing called peat, which is a black, crumbly, very high in a carbon substance. It's very low in actual fertility. So that's a type of peat soils. And as you move down the valley side, you might start to get then mixes of soils where there's more organic matter, where it's more free draining, it's interacting with many more plants. So we maybe get the red brown soils, the ones that we tend to want to farm. So they're usually in the mid slopes. You can see on both sides of both rock types, somewhere in these mid slopes where it's not too steep, and that's where we've got sort of the best soils to work. When you get down to the valley bottoms, sometimes you can get it can be sort of the same conditions can happen, the sort of deep peat, sort of pickled, acidic, or even sometimes alkaline environments it's saying there. But also I think about you end up with lots of clays at the bottom. Those finer particles as well are all going to end up getting washed down to the bottom of the valley. So it's all going to be not just that the water is all going to head down there. It's also going to be that the finer rock particles are going to end up being washed to the lower part of the valley. So you get much heavier soils that can be quite fertile, but they also tend to flood. So you've got a different sort of set of opportunities and challenges for farming or how to interact with that landscape. Okay, there's one final slide with this section. We're going to start talking about water next. And I think, obviously, really as to anything, life comes from water. We can't live for more than 2-3 days without it. It's the hydrological cycle, the water cycle that joins us all together. But I'm going to look at this final slide and frame again catching and storing energy in this bigger way, because there's a lot of detail to go to this idea. Now, I want you just to look at the middle section of this diagram, and we're seeing a forest, some trees, and a figure of 450. Now, that's 450 billion tons. It doesn't matter. It sounds like a lot. So it is. So throughout the course of the year, forests, trees growing, suck down, bring down 450 billion tons of carbon out of the atmosphere and turn that into leaves and trees and fruits and soil and roots and things like that, okay? But at the same time, those same trees are being eaten by caterpillars, cut down by people, living and dying their own life cycles and decomposing and returning back to the atmosphere again. And you'll notice that there's 444. So the carbon return is actually 6 billion tons less than the drawdown. So there's a net carbon drawdown, sequestration, or more carbon is being put into soils than is leaving the system. This is the picture from the 1990s. Over the sea, actually, we have the same processes going on. The algae and the little crustacea and things living in the sea, same time living their lives, they're pulling down 338 billion tons of carbon out of the atmosphere, and through their little shells that deposit onto the bottom of the ocean, and imagine the dead whale sinking to the bottom, there's a net sequestration within the oceans of about 6 billion tons too. Some of it, obviously, most of it returning through the same kind of life cycles. So in recent millennia, in this what the people call the Holocene period, the period in which we've had agriculture for the last 10,000 years, we've had a very settled, stable climate because we've had this net carbon sequestration, and it seems like the more carbon we've had in the soil, in the living things on the planet, and in the living things in the sea, the more stable the climate has become, and it's allowed us to do agriculture and for civilization to expand, humanity to expand from just a few million people to now here we are, 7 billion of us in the human family. but on the other side, here we've got 23 billion tons of emissions from industry. Well, I can tell you now, 2020, it's 40 billion tons of emissions from industry and land use, net land use. Because now land use has actually become a net emitter of 5 billion tons as well, because of too much intensive farming, not enough forestry, and not enough carbon return. And dangerously and worryingly is, as the ocean pulls down more carbon, it itself becomes more acidic, which then is changing the life and the possibility for life in the ocean, because many of the crustacea can't exist in an acidic environment because their shells start to dissolve. So the challenge that we have before us in terms of catching and storing energy and in terms of the transition that we have to make is we've got to switch off the 23 that became 40 has to go back down to 5, 5 billion tons only from emissions. And for us as permaculturists, we've really got to look at these living systems and ask about how can we interact with these living systems to speed them up, to make them stronger, and to make them able to lock down much, much more carbon. Because the more carbon we've got in the soil, the more fertile it becomes. I mean, this is the craziness. For carbon in the air, big problem. Carbon in the soil, massive asset. Okay, so this is part of our mission, is to get carbon in the soil, build fertility, and in the process, we can build community, we can develop yields. That's the next principle, is how we start to meet our needs. And this presentation is to take you through that big picture journey, is, and you can apply this to every sort of detail of what you're trying to do in your life, but is your number one mission in permaculture is to sequestrate as much carbon as you can back into the soil. And in the process, have a lot of fun doing it, and by producing lots of food and enjoying interacting with nature, because that's what we've got, and that's the joy of life. And I will close now at this point, and thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back soon.